Just wanted to start this out. This is Mogadishu, December 1992, January 1993. I was there for 6 months for Operation Restore Hope. So it was a homecoming of sorts. But right after I got there, I spent a lot of time with my interpreter, and he gave me a proverb which basically tells what this story is about. It's an old Somali proverb that goes back to around the turn of the century when the Somalis were fighting the Italians, the French, the British, and themselves. And the proverb is, wherever there are guns, there are many tears. And it was a homecoming. I'm married to a Somali. I did my master's thesis on U.S. foreign policy in Somalia. And the Somalis, if anyone remembers them, are very distinctive-looking people. They share the same language, the same culture, the same history, come from the two same mythical brothers. And I sort of refer to them as a motorcycle gang. No bikes, no leather jackets, but plenty of attitude. And I'm from Detroit, so I was a little bit worried about going there. But anyway, just to set the scene really briefly, the central government in Somalia fell as a result of a civil war in the later part of 1990. A disorder took over. You had a drought, which produced a famine. Also, because there was a civil war, there was a paradox. You had a country without a government with a shortage of food, but a surplus of weapons. And right before I went to Somalia, I went over to the CIA to talk to their analysts to tell me all about what I was going to see there. And one of the analysts told me that the CIA had done an estimate that there was one gun for every three people in Mogadishu. So at that time, Mogadishu was about 1 million people. So I figured, a lot of guns. Maybe not by Detroit or Baltimore or New York standards, but still a lot of guns. And the United States had sent food there in August, and they figured if they flooded the country with food, that would solve the famine. The only problem was they did not control the guns that controlled the distribution for the food. So President Bush announced a few days before Christmas that the U.S. was sending 20,000 people there, 20,000 soldiers there to Somalia to help break the back of the famine and to establish distribution for all these people who were starving that you all saw on television. So I had helped break the story on the intervention, so I went to Somalia on Christmas Day 1992, left my wife and my three children, and it was a homecoming of sorts because my wife was born in Kenya, but she is a Somali, and it was always her hope that we would go and retire one day to Somalia. So of course, I come to Mogadishu, and I remember driving around Mogadishu the first day, and I did not see one building that did not have shell fragments or bullet holes. I grew up in Detroit, and that really surprised me that I saw something like this. So the Marines came to Mogadishu. You know, the Marines take territory. They hand it off to someone else, but they take territory. So as the Marines were going out establishing these humanitarian corridors, they discovered something quite unsettling. They were being shot at every day by the people that ostensibly they had come to rescue. And after the first couple of days, I remember I went out to see the Marines at their headquarters in North Mogadishu at a soccer stadium. And the Marines were, you know, set up there, and they were getting sniped at from buildings. And that's when I found out about the Marine snipers, because I went back to do this story 2 weeks later, and I asked the captain there, I said, how are the snipers? And Marine snipers get tested. You know, they can take an eye out at like 500 yards. So they said after a few days, the Somalis stopped sniping at them. So anyway, the Marines decided what they wanted to do to try to put an end to this shooting was to take down the biggest weapons market at Bakar Market, which was this sprawling central market where you could get just about anything. I had been there about a week before, and I went to a place called Air Tutka. Now, Air Tutka is a Somali word for sky shooters, because this is where you would go to buy weapons. So you just walk up to the stall, someone has an AK-47 or M60 heavy machine gun, or any kind of weapon. All of the weapons that Somali had bought from everyone were on display there because all of the garrisons had been looted. And I actually bought an AK-47 for $25. They charged me a little bit extra because I was an American, of course. And the Marines decided they were going to take this weapons market down. So I went on the raid with them. So we're driving. I remember driving through with the Marines in the back of a truck, and I had a flak jacket on. You see them on TV, these Bosnia flak jackets. They're really blue, and they have a big breastplate. And I remember Captain Joe Davis from the Air Force was looking at me, and the Marines were just cracking up. And I was like, why are these guys laughing at me? And they had, you know, what I thought were unsubstantial vests, but those were for shrapnel. And Lieutenant Davis says, you really ought to take that thing off. I said, why should I take it off? He says, you should take it off because if anyone really wants to kill you, they'll shoot you in the head. You're just drawing attention to yourself. Plus, if anyone did shoot you in the chest, it can't take a .08 round. It would press the breastplate into your chest about 2 inches, break all your ribs, you die of internal bleeding, which was good. So immediately I'm with the Marines. The Marines get lost in the middle of Bakara Market, but they finally, and they have helicopters and all kinds of other stuff, they finally come to a warehouse. And in front of this warehouse was an old Somali woman who looked just like my mother-in-law. So they told her that they were going to, they wanted to get inside the warehouse. And she said, no, please don't. It was an old rusty lock and chains. So I'm a radio reporter. So I record the Marines breaking into this warehouse, breaking down this metal door. The platoon I was with went inside this warehouse, which was about the size of this auditorium. And all that was in there were essentially sacks of coal and, you know, old wheelbarrows and tires. So the Marines went in, spent about 5 minutes, didn't pick anything up, and were walking out. And I saw this old lady who was now in the middle of the warehouse, and she was sitting down, and she looked very, very sad. So one of the things that my wife taught me was respect of elders, but also this old lady looked like my mother-in-law or my grandmother. So I said to her in Somali, I said, Mahatsine Ayeyo, which was thank you, grandmother. And she smiled at me, and then she said, Suk, which means wait. I'm like, what does she want me to wait for? So she reaches over a couple of feet and pulls up one of these burlap sacks and hands me what I think is a hammer. It's the strangest hammer I've ever seen because it looked like the head of the hammer was sideways. All the Marines had basically gone out. Lieutenant Colonel Stokes was supposed to be taking care of me. I said, Lieutenant Colonel Stokes, what is this? And I saw the look in his face was horror. I'll be finished real quick. It was horror. So he said, wait right where you are. So he walked from where the door is there, walked very carefully, took my right hand with his hand, and then took this hammer out of my hand. And I said, what is it? He said, it's a Chinese-made Korean War vintage hand grenade. I said, could you ask her if she has any more of these? And I'm like, you know, I'm not good in conversational Somali. I mean, what am I supposed to do? I thought I was like, you know, Ann Sullivan with Helen Keller trying to, you know, come up with a language we could speak together. But I asked her in broken Somali, weapons ki halkan, because halkan means here. And she smiled and she said, ha, which means yes. She walked to the back of the warehouse, took up another burlap sack, and there were these two long tubes. They were 90-millimeter recoilless rifles. She showed them to me. So with that, Lieutenant Colonel Stokes called the entire platoon back in. They took out enough weapons that they had walked through in that warehouse to fill up 3 flatbed trucks. And the old lady had obviously wanted to get rid of these things. So anyway, the old lady and I go outside of the warehouse. We're sitting in the warehouse, and she obviously thinks that even though I may not look Somali, I can speak Somali. She is jabbering away. And I'm following every second or, you know, third or fourth word. And then I asked one of the Somali interpreters who was uniformed, who was with, I said, man, what is she saying? She says that this was her husband's warehouse, that the gangs knew that the U.S. was going to search the weapons because they had been, the Somalis who worked for the United Nations and the Americans had been sharing information. So that's why there were no weapons at these weapons stalls, we knew. So he comes to me and he says, listen, man, this is a great job, this is fine. So I wanted to thank this old lady. And the Marines had these things called MREs, meals ready to eat, which are basically they're unedible. But the only thing I remembered about the MREs, because we'd eaten them, was that they had chocolate bars in them. And I know that Somalis love chocolate because my wife has a real sweet tooth. So I said, let me get one of these chocolate bars. So Lieutenant Colonel Stokes called one of his men over. They gave him the chocolate bar. He wanted me to give her the chocolate bar out in front of him. I says no, because there could be other people watching her, the people who put their weapons there. If they see us handing a gift to her, there's going to be some retribution. They could kill her. So I asked her to come inside the warehouse, sat her down where she was, took the chocolate bar and gave her the chocolate bar, and said, Mahatsune, thank you. She took that chocolate bar from me, ripped it open, and I have never seen anyone enjoy a chocolate bar or any food like that before. And the thing that I remember most was that as she was eating, she was purring like a cat. And I don't know how, I have an idea of how she felt, but there have been few times in my life where I actually felt as good for somebody else as I did for that old lady that day. That's it.